M, it's 5:35 on a Thursday afternoon. All is going pretty well here these days. 13-year-old me is just in complete shock right now. I mean, I don't even know what to say about it, honestly. I'm kind of frazzled by the whole thing. All I can say is that, I mean, this is a 26-year-long answer for me in particular, and I'm just mind blown. I'm trying to clear my mind of all expectations before Sunday because Lynch and Frost are going to take us on one hell of a journey. I have no idea where they're going to take us. I'll probably get about half of my guesses right and half of my guesses wrong, all for the wrong and right reasons. I just recommend everybody just kind of go for the ride. I mean, this is unbelievable and a wonderful time to be alive. So, we're all enjoying it. Anyway, :7, ; ; LL. Take care, Eagle Scouts.
Way to spell it out there, John.
Right? John, remember what they say. If the erection lasts more than 4 hours, call a doctor. I think that sums up how we all feel about this episode, though. But alas, it is not our job to be speechless. We have to be speechful and talk and talk and talk. So you've heard all that we had to say about it. So now it's time to hear what you have to say about it. That's correct. You're listening to the Sparkwood and 21 Feedback Podcast. We're doing episode 16. This is a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Em. And due to the volume of feedback that we received today, we're going to only read the feedback that's addressing part 16. So we want to give a shout out to Jenny, Jessica, and Alistair for writing in. Your feedback came in after the deadline last week, but thank you so much for writing in. We hope that you're able to write in for the upcoming feedback section we're going to have after the finale. More on that with our next recap. We'll give you an idea of how we're going to approach the last feedback section. But we are now in the penultimate feedback section of Sparkwood and 21.
We got a bunch to do tonight, so let's jump right in. First up is Trisha. Trisha says, "Hello, ESP. Ha! The return indeed. Do you believe it? I'm so stoked we have our beloved Cooper back. It's like there's something right in the world again, even if it's just a TV show. I'm calling it a win for the good guys. I nearly cried when Cooper woke up. And he is woke as fuck." Yes, dear No Shippers and yes, dear No Shippers and friends, I know that's not what that means. Please forgive me. I'm just super excited. I whooped and hollered with glee and scared the shit out of my cats. I think Em and I might have done the same thing. You know, the cats kind of jump sometimes when you get really active and interactive with a TV show. Some instant reactions that I can remember. I think Richard's existence was wrong, against the laws of nature or something, what with him being the offspring of Mr. C, so it made sense to me that he went out the way he did, like a wrong got corrected. Then the shootout between the Joneses' neighbor and Chantel and her husband. As they were getting shot up in the van, I was thinking, has this turned into a Tarantino film? I did start listening to the No Ship Pulp Fiction episode this week, so to see Jennifer Jason Leigh and Tim Roth get all shot up in this ridiculous over-the-top scene kind of blew my mind. What a way for them to go. And on her last bag of Cheetos, too. ever. Cooper's tender, genuinely heartwarming farewells to Bushnell, Janie E., and Sonny Jim were a beautiful reminder of what a good man he is. Not perfect, but a truly good person. I can't comment about Diane yet. Funny, I was going to email this morning just to say, Paul, I'm totally with you on the island about Diane. Well, now I don't know what to say. Sorry, man. I just need some time to process this shit. Scared my cats at the end of that scene, too. Poor kitties. She goes on to say, Audrey's dance. My God. What a beautiful, strange, delicious, disturbing scene as she danced. The people in the background swaying to the music. It drew me in so deeply that when it ended with the fight, I was totally stunned. Then the switch. She's seeing her face in a mirror, in some sort of white room, I guess. Another scare the shit out of my cats moment. I need time to process this too. Oh, I almost forgot. The final scene. The band is playing backwards, right? I kept watching the drummer with his swishy brushes. Was there music playing backwards too, or just the band's movements? Well, I'm going to ride this high all week. Can't wait to hear everyone's reactions. Thanks for everything you do. The pod and the feedback have truly enriched my experience of The Return. Until next time, Trish.
Thank you, Trish.
Yes, thank you, Trish. I definitely think the music was playing backwards. I was trying to figure out if maybe the notes were written backwards and then they could play it. But I also was transfixed by the swishy brushes and I was trying to figure it out based on that.
I think I watched it a few times and I think they just played it backwards and slowed it down. You know what I mean? Because it was really well done. I didn't notice it the first time. But then the second time I'm in the back room of my house and I've got a bigger TV and I'm kind of closer and it really showed the way they did it. It was fantastic.
I agree. I think it was done. It's definitely being played backwards, and mm-hmm. I think they filmed the band playing it forward and played that backwards along with it too, I think is what was happening, because that would have been
amazing.
A lot to do to actually play those notes backwards and then film them doing it. So
although I'm sure David Lynch and them thought of it and then were like, maybe not. Let's not ask them.
Yes, and I agree with you that Richard's existence was wrong. I think everybody would agree with you. I was thinking about the fact that Steve said on our podcast that he thought non-existent when he was disintegrated there. And I wonder if that would undo some things.
Hmm. Ooh.
That'd be pretty cool.
It'd be nice for that mother.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool sci-fi kind of thing to throw out there. Like, if he gets taken out of existence, does everything that he did unravel, the good and the bad, which I can't really see him doing any good.
But we haven't had anything established like that, so it's probably not a possibility. But
yeah.
Still pretty cool, though, if it did.
Every time I see White Room associated with Audrey, I always think of Cream. Like, in the white room with black curtains.
That's good, right? I like that.
Do, 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 do. Thank you, Trish.
Thank you, Trish.
Trish the dish.
Up next, we have Adam. Hey, you three. Wow. I can't even imagine what these last 2 hours will be like. I'm so excited for the finale. We all knew, at least hoped, he'd return eventually. But even still, I have to admit, I got chills hearing good old Coop being back 100%. That scene was incredible. It leads to my first question, though. Are we about to see yet another incarnation of Cooper? Guessing that he's asking Mike to make another manufactured copy of himself to trick evil Coop? If so, I've lost track of how many characters this will be for Kyle. If there is another, I'm sure it will be just as great. He really does deserve some major recognition for this. His acting is phenomenal. Only other thing I got is about Diane and Audrey. Is the real Diane at the sheriff's station? Not sure what she meant by that. Something to do with NATO? Or does Mr. C have her and Audrey locked up somewhere mentally and or physically? I'm assuming he did something similar to Audrey as he did with Diane. Maybe raped her and possibly created a tulpa too. Audrey ending in that white room with the mirror, Alice in Wonderland? Someone is messing with her head. She said before she felt like someone else, just as Diane did before she pulled the gun. If she is a tulpa too, I feel that means Mr. C may have plans for the real versions of them if they aren't gone already, or they are in some lodge limbo prison. Anyway, I guess we'll find out soon enough. Showtime is running all 18 hours starting at 4 o'clock a.m. Sunday. Once it's all said and done, are you all going to do a rewatch podcast? Half joking, but kind of serious. I think we all might need it. Thanks again for this great podcast.
Ooh, okay. That sounds like a daunting task at this point, but
I do plan on doing it. So either you can join me, both of you, or I'll do it by myself.
No, we can do it eventually. Eventually.
Apparently, M's going to do one, so stay tuned for that. We might hook up for that. We'll see. I can totally buy into Adam's idea that he has them stashed somewhere, both
absolutely.
Of the real people, and that's where Audrey is right now. And she's like waking up and out of some sort of dream and realizing, like, where am I? What's going on? And having a big freak out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like they have to be kept alive to provide some sort of support to their tulpas in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just to keep them alive. I mean, just to keep them going. Otherwise, you're going to have brain dead matter. You know what I mean? If they could just, it seems like they can make the tulpas out of the hair. So I don't know. I mean, it makes sense if he would have them captured and then put the tulpas out. So he has control of the situation, though. So that would make more sense.
I was wondering if Diane was maybe a tulpa created by Philip Jeffries, and she's been a tulpa for a long, long time.
Yeah, but why would Philip Jeffries make her to attack the the FBI like that? You know what I mean? Like Gordon Cole and them. Or do you think that maybe Coop just knew a secret to kind of turn Atopa against him? Which would be crazy because then he could do that with Coops.
Yeah, see, I don't know. See, that just thwarted that.
It's a really cool theory.
I don't know. Maybe she was a corrupted Tulpa.
Yeah.
She's definitely a Tulpa.
Bad dates.
As far as who made her. Not sure.
So, Adam, I'm wondering if you're going to start at 4 in the morning on Sunday and try to marathon it through until the... If you can do that, I mean, let us know how much coffee you had to drink to keep you going. That's crazy.
I wish I had a couple days off to do it, like Saturday and Sunday. That would be fantastic.
Thanks, Adam.
Gotta work. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, Adam.
Up next is Joni. Joni says, "Hello, M, Steve, and Paul. My joy is at 100% with the return of our special agent, Dale Cooper. What an amazing episode. I thought back to season 2, episode 1, where Agent Cooper was lying on the floor after he had been shot and spoke to Diane via the tape recorder. He said, 'At a time like this, curiously, you begin to think about the things you regret or things you might miss. I would like, in general, to treat people with much more care and respect.' Our newly awakened Agent Cooper uses considerate, kind words and interactions with those who loved him, the family he missed out on, and those who helped him during his catatonic phase. The world is just a much better place with Agent Dale Cooper in it." Agreed. 100%. But even though Mr. Lynch allows us to bask in the warm and the fuzzy for 1 week, we all know a roller coaster of emotions lies ahead. And still, so many unanswered questions. Who is NATO? This Japanese word means without. Without sight? Without evil? Huh. Where's the real Diane? Are they connected? Diane sure had a lot of Japanese decor in her apartment. What about Agent Preston? Tammy disappeared from the view when Albert fired his first shot at Diane, only to reappear when they both fired their weapons. Technical glitch, or is Tammy a Tulpa? And most importantly, why is Special Agent Dickhead always yelling at Agent Wilson? Wilson! I didn't notice that Tammy disappeared out of the shot.
That's what's got me going, huh? I can see Tammy being a Tulpa because of her behavior.
I thought she moved so she can get to her weapon.
I saw the episode, I don't know, 3 or 4 times, but I watched this particular scene probably 5 times. And I personally didn't at any point think that she was out of the frame. I know at one point she reaches over to her right-hand side and she's grabbing her piece.
Exactly.
Just as you can see Albert going for his, because they, you know, their training has indicated to them that Diane's behavior is leading up to something. So that's what I took it as.
I agree with that. I think she was just reaching because you see her move the same time he goes for his pistol in his jacket. So they both knew something was coming, and hers might not have been in her coat. It might have just been sitting next to her because they were in the hotel room, you know?
Yeah, and she's not wearing a coat, so.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if Tammy is a Tulpa, that might actually explain the reason why she walks the way she does, which seems out of character for an FBI agent in general. Mm-hmm. Early on, when she walked like Jessica Rabbit, essentially, stuff like that, that seems goes against the grain of what you would normally find within a FBI professional.
Interesting.
So maybe she's a Tulpa that's created to be watching Gordon, because she does have her eye on him all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Jury's out on that one.
Yeah,
I don't,
for sure.
It seems like a lot to heap on to the last two episodes to actually have her be a Tulpa as well. But we'll see. Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, but there's so much that needs to be heaped on, so we might as well add it. You know, there's so much out there.
So Joni goes on to say, "Hopefully many of our questions, not all, will be answered next week in the finale. We need to have some loose ends in order to have a season 4, right? Thanks again for your brilliant podcast, Joni. P.S. Showtime executive, season 4. Are you sure this is a good idea? Lynch and Frost, it's a good idea. The entire Twin Peaks viewership, it looks like it's a pretty good idea." I definitely agree about the warm and fuzzies and how that's going to get taken away from us like a rug from right underneath our feet. But we're going to love every minute of it no matter what.
Yes. Yeah.
No matter how bad it gets. Thank you, Joni.
Thank you, Joni.
Yeah, thanks.
Up next, we have Leanne. Leanne says, "Oh, wow. Our favorite special agent is back and even more dashing than he was 25 years previously. What an amazing episode. I'm loving the return so much and approach the grand finale with a mixture of highly charged excitement, weighty expectation, and huge sadness. I feel so privileged to be here, able to watch just one final series of the beautiful, perfectly crafted nightmare that is Twin Peaks. It's a bit like tucking into a huge cherry pie, savoring every mouthful, but with each mouthful, the nearer you are to eating the whole pie and having none left to devour. It's like Chantal with her Cheetos. So now we're all going to start acting like we're on the rag.
So what if we are?
Leanne says, just a few thoughts I have about part 16. Is Diane somehow NATO? Diane says she isn't herself and says that she is in the sheriff's station. Diane appears to favor Oriental style clothing, and NATO is played by a Japanese actress. Is the electricity that zaps Richard the black fire that Hawk talks about in his living map? Hawk likens the fire on the side of the mountain to modern-day electricity and says that it is the intent that influences the outcome of the fire. Could Evil Cooper, the dirty doppelganger, have been around for longer than we first thought? He tells Richard, shortly before Richard's sparkly demise, that he is 25 years his senior. This would have meant Agent Cooper was 25 years old when he came to Twin Peaks. Cooper was actually 35 at the time. Perhaps the doppelganger was created when Agent Cooper was a 10-year-old. I need to dig out my copy of My Life, My Tapes to see if there is any hint of a shadow self in Cooper's pre-Twin Peaks existence. Anyway, just a few thoughts. Enjoy the two-hour extravaganza next week. I feel we are going to a place both wonderful and strange. Leanne from the UK.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I would say yes, that the electricity that zaps Richard is a variation of maybe it is the black fire. Never mind, I was going to say variation of just fire, that depending on what intent was behind it. But you're saying specifically here, Leanne, black fire. I haven't thought about that map in a while.
Yeah, I haven't either. So much stuff has been thrown at us since then.
Well, Blackfire just did the world some good.
Yeah.
Taking him out.
If that's what it is.
It's one hell of a booty trap.
That's what I said. This whole age thing. Because I thought there was something fishy about when he said it. Like, okay, that means something.
If he had 25 to his age, I would bring him to 50. Yeah, so what she's saying is correct.
60. So there's some sort of age differentiation between Doppelcoop and Cooper, then.
Or Mr. C just lies about his age.
Yeah, don't we all?
Could be that vain, yeah.
He's been turning 50 for 15 years.
50. It's the new 65.
It is weird. Mr. C is pretending like he's 50, so yeah, he's a liar.
Damn liar.
All right, thank you, Leanne.
Up next is Jorge. He says, hello, all. Before I regale you with my random thoughts, I just wanted to remind you that I had written you to pass on my theory at the time that Audrey was still in a coma. Well, after several episodes and second guessing, I feel I could take a victory lap. I called it. Cue the balloons, tater tots, and hookers.
Wait. Is she?
Balloons, tater what? Tots, and hookers. That's quite the mix.
That's like Nina Simone wanting cocaine, sausages, and champagne.
He goes on to say, getting just one thing right about Lynch makes me feel like I solved the Rosetta Stone, so forgive my celebration. Okay, enough about that, but I did totally nail it.
Maybe. I'm sorry. I don't mean to pop your balloon and tater tots and hookers. But we don't know for a fact that she's in a coma. She could be a tulpa. She could be stuck in a lodge room like Paul and Steve were talking about.
There's still a lot of options on
the
table.
Still a lot of options. I'm sorry, Jorge. Mm-hmm. Don't hate me.
But you know, we're not the authority on this. So we're going to see. We're going to see. We're not telling you not to celebrate.
No, no. You could still get the cocaine, tater tots, and hookers. But that's not what you asked for. Balloons, tater tots, and hookers. And if you want to give me some of your tots, I'll take them.
Yeah. The tater tots are good. Moving on.
Oh, wait. I mean, she could be in a coma. She could have sat bolt upright in bed and there was a mirror in her face suddenly.
Mm.
Like maybe had a mirror waiting for her.
That would be weird.
She's in a padded cell with Vanessa Ives.
Oh.
Yeah. John Clare is her orderly.
Yep. John Clare's going to come in. I'm sorry, miss. This is not Twin Peaks. Moving on, I'm sure others have already considered this, but it seems pretty clear to me that there is a group of super friends working hard to get Bad Coop into the lodge. This includes the firemen, Jeffries, and Garland Briggs. There seems to be a grand plan that we don't fully yet see, but the pieces are in place. Green Glove Guy is at the ready next to NATO. Jeffries managed to at least remove Bob from Bad Coop with Ray's help, and the fireman told Cooper, Episode 1, Scene 1, that when he wakes, he must make his way to the Twin Peaks Sheriff Station. So what has Briggs been up to? Briggs, I believe, helped build the box that helped Coop leave the lodge. My theory is on shaky ground since the pick of Bad Coop at the location was found, but hear me out. The box which protruded from the building knew that Coop would pass through there, and once in the box, it would send him to a safe location. Bad Coop's presence at the location may mean that he was involved in its creation, but it did not help him in any way. In fact, the box helped redirect Cooper to a safe place, the Purple World, which we now recognize as the Realm of the Firemen. Furthermore, NATO was put in place to prevent going through the socket until she flipped the switch. The mother at the door was, in my opinion, the arm's evil doppelganger giving chase. Mother could also be something far more sinister, but we just don't have that answer yet. After the switch is flipped, Briggs floats by and says, Blue Rose. Why? What purpose would that serve for anyone but Coop? I believe that this was Briggs openly telling Coop that he's there to help. He somehow helped arrange the events as they occurred, and we got him to a safe place, and had Dougie not existed, he would have swapped places with Bad Coop. Which leads to the last plot hole of the madness written above. If Dougie was Bad Coop's insurance plan, then disrupting Coop's arrival at the box was option number one. If you recall, the security guard was missing when the girl showed up with coffee on her second visit. If Duncan Todd sent her, then her first visit was reconnaissance, and so he had the guard removed in time for her second visit.
Like that.
Somehow, her presence helped the escape of evil arm slash mother, but I won't try and figure that one out. Perhaps that particular nightmare will return during the last 2 hours. The above was on my mind because with the death of Tulpa Diane, Hutch, Chantal, and his son during the last episode, Mr. C is now totally alone. By contrast, Good Coop is surrounded with allies and will have many more when he arrives at Twin Peaks. All 16 hours thus far has been about this. Slowly boxing Mr. C in and setting the pieces, and it all started with that crazy box. Okay, I've written enough, but I do want to mention one more thing. During Margaret's final monologue, she tells Hawk to watch for that one, the one I told you about, the one under the moon on Blue Pine Mountain. This, I believe, is a direct reference to both the living map that Hawk showed Sheriff Truman and the drawing found in the steel vial that they were given by Betty Briggs. If you look closely at both, the thing that Hawk says we never want to know about is drawn directly beneath a moon and over one of the mountain peaks. Blue Pine, what does the message mean? No idea. Okay, that's enough for me. Keep up the great work, and I will miss listening to you all once the show is done. Thank you, Jorge. Wow, that's a lot to digest right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. C's not quite alone. He still has Bob and an army of smokemen. Woodsman. Woodsman,
yeah.
Exactly. You know, so is he alone? I don't think so.
Well, we don't know for sure if he still has Bob.
True.
And it seems like a lot of people are thinking that Bob has left, that Bob was taken, and it was the woodsman that took him. So it seems like the woodsmen are actually more aligned with Bob than they are with Coop.
Yeah.
Mr.
C. Could be. But we don't know for sure.
Mm-mm. We haven't seen Bob with Mr. C since, but we think we've seen Bob with Sarah.
Yeah.
I'd still fall with the mother with Sarah, but who knows? I mean, at this point, I have no idea.
Sunday.
Right?
Hmm. Yay!
And it's not the last time you'll listen to us. We still have other podcasts that we do, so don't forget, you can join us for the movies and other TV shows.
Yeah.
So Margaret has tasked Hawk to look out for the one under the moon on Blue Pine Mountain, and if that is the thing that Hawk had said that you don't want to know about, he's got a really grim task that is before him that he has some awareness of, and I feel sorry for him, but I mean, there's no better person to do it.
Yeah.
Yep. Give it to Hawk. He'll do it.
And wasn't that Damn the petroglyph looking thing? The mother, the symbol for the mother? Wasn't that what was up there?
Yeah, it was that.
Oof.
With the parachute.
Oof. Which might be a moon now.
All right. Thank you, Jorge.
Yes, thanks, man.
Up next, we have Vicky. And Vicky says, Hi, M, Steve, and Paul. I'm a big fan of your Sparkwood and 21 podcast. Thanks for having these thoughtful discussions every week. As we are all gearing up for the exciting finale this weekend, I thought I'd write in and share a couple of cocktails I developed in tribute to Twin Peaks that I posted on my blog, liquorsnapper.com. The first one was in tribute to the original show, which I call The Owls Are Not What They Seem, and it's mezcal-based with ginger, apple, habanero, and cinnamon.
Ooh.
The second is a tribute to Mr. Jackpots from The Return. It's a tequila-based cocktail with coffee, berry, and ramazzotti.
Mm.
Ramazzotti?
Sounds good.
What is ramazzotti?
Razzmatazz?
I've never heard of
it's
that.
It's not razzmatazz. Mm. It's R-A-M-A-Z-Z-O-T-T-I.
Ramazzotti? I've never heard of it.
Sounds good.
Thought you might get a kick out of them. I'll definitely be sipping one or the other come Sunday. Thanks again for your terrific podcast. Please keep doing what you're doing. And I will share these links in our show notes. Thank you, Vicky, for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks.
And up next, we have Nico. And Nico says, hello, Sparkies. And hello, Anna, represent. Because we had Anna write a few episodes back.
Cool.
Hailing Nico from Finland. Nico says, I just have to pay you a visit at this time for obvious reasons. I was right in my prediction that I couldn't come forward with any intellectual input during the show's run anymore. I meant to write on many occasions, but combined with time constraints, I found myself unable to express my thoughts. In short, I went full Dougie for the remainder of the series. Oh well, the wake up is right around the corner. Besides, your feedback section doesn't lack well put together and highly substantial letters. Whatever topic I fail to put in words usually gets covered extensively along the way. And now for those unorganized musings concerning part 16. So we've been expecting Coop to come back for the entire season, but I still wasn't prepared for how I would feel when that actually happened. Due to conditioning us to Dougie for so long, it was still unexpected. Unreal, rather. I literally had goosebumps all the time during the real Cooper scenes, starting from the moment when the hum began by Cooper's bedside. I was filled with awe and pure joy as I fell into the demographic majority, which considered this event to be outright divinely magnificent. Can I in any form emphasize more how amazing this is? We got Cooper back, and it was before the finale. Yes, the end is nigh. For the finale, the show has frankly a poop load of loose ends to tie, which I believe it has no way of pulling off. And that's fine, really, but it raises a question about following seasons in a much more concrete manner than before. What can be said now? We'll see. The continuation is really not even an issue. I'll say it was a phenomenon of half a century that we got new Twin Peaks at all, and of this quality. In its entirety, this season climbs new heights entirely for Twin Peaks and serialized television, respectively. In an exhilarating and climactic episode such as this, it is very well demonstrated how intuitively built this show is. Examples of this are the confirmations about Doppeldale's dark path. We expected from the start that Doppeldale had paid rapey visits to both Audrey and Diane from the way things were played out. We didn't know, but we had a feeling. It's not bad script writing or storytelling where pivotal plot points are visible from miles away. On the contrary, viewer is fed an emotional lead that instinctively tells you a notion not tangible, but true. It is a fine line between these when you try to sustain the suspense of the story as long as possible, but Lynch and Frost seem to master this feat. When Doppeldale utters campily, "Goodbye, my son," or Diane, in a very distressing scene, confesses being raped by Cooper, the reveal feels natural and satisfying. It's the same with Cooper's awakening, really. We knew that he would come back, yet we were teased and toyed about it, using this firm belief of ours. And what a reward it was when our prophecy was fulfilled. Anyway, I think I'd better wrap up this ramble. We're done with the Dougie phase after all. A quick note to close on. Wasn't it curious that the coordinates that Diane sent seemed to have vanished from her phone when she peeks at the emoticon all again? It was. Hope to write again as we reach the bittersweet aftermath of the return. But if I fail to, I'd like to say that I've utterly enjoyed listening to everything you've had to say, M, Steve, and Paul, and a special thanks to the feedback community for enriching the experience a ton. Be seeing you, Nico from Finland. P.S. Paul, I'm so sorry. I think he's referencing Diane here. Like, he's so sorry for you, for you and your island.
No way. Remember, this isn't the real Diane. Duh. She's still, the real Diane is still good. Everybody stay. Why are y'all leaving? Why are y'all leaving? So lonely.
Because he's got a picture of the old bellhop that has the look of sorrow from the original
yes.
Twin Peaks and Diane at the bar when Albert first sees her.
That island's going to cool on you. I think we all agree that this, I think we all agree that this was some of the best television that we've ever seen, this particular episode, just for the fact that Cooper came back. Having goosebumps that whole time when you're seeing the real Dale Cooper is probably not an uncommon occurrence amongst all of the people listening to this podcast and writing in feedback. I think we all had our own emotional reactions, but I could see goosebumps, fist pumping, yelling, hooting, hollering. All of the above.
Cat scaring.
Yeah, cat scaring. A lot of that. And I also agree that the show does have a poop load of loose ends to tie up. And it has no real way of pulling off. You're right about that. I mean, if it was to try to, it would just be nothing but 2 hours of, and then this happened, and then this happened, and this happened. And we would get no time for like dramatic stretch out of the stories or meaningful dialogue or whatever. It would just be like 20 little vignettes of, right, you know, 2 minutes each talking about, and this is how these people ended up. But it's okay, because I don't think that there's going to be more Twin Peaks out there. There definitely, as Em has been saying this whole time, there's a sense of finality to this. Mm-hmm. But the supplemental material is probably going to dig deep, you know, other books, and possibly, fingers crossed, not that I've heard anything like this, but just kind of hoping as a fan that maybe another like feature-length movie.
Oh, that would be sweet.
And to leave some things unresolved is just going to keep us all talking.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you, Nico.
Yes, thank you. Up next is Carrie. Carrie says, M. Stephen Paul, first time writing to you guys. Love your podcast recaps and the listener feedback. My head has been spinning since Sunday's episode. In particular, two things from episode 16 that I noticed in my rewatch. One, the stone. Two birds, one stone. Could this be the stone that the giant slash fireman is speaking of in the very beginning?
Nice.
Doppel slash Dirty Coop made references to 25 years your senior or something of that nature as they approached the stone. Also, could Doppel Coop have created him with Audrey knowing that someday he would come in handy for this purpose? Such a bright young man, that Richard. Too bad all of his dreams went up in smoke. Okay, no more bad puns. That was a good pun. That was a good pun. Good puns are always welcome here.
Mr. C did say he was a bright young man, and boy, was he bright on top of that rock.
Oh, painful. Number two, the opening sequence to each episode shows the golden orb in Laura's face. Then there's a chord slash tone right before falling starts. Now, Coop wakes up. Falling plays. Then the next scene cuts to Diane at the bar, right as she's getting the text. From here, we hear the same chord slash tone. They are played in reverse order.
Hmm.
Ooh, good catch.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, I didn't catch that.
I loved this show since 1990, and my 14-year-old heart was broken when it went off the air. I wrote to David Lynch frequently and begged him to bring it back. Back then, there were no podcasts or internet or any outlet to discuss the show and explore its deeper meanings. The magic, the mystery, masterpiece that this show has once again stolen my 40-year-old heart. I am so grateful for your podcasts and other shows out there that give fans an outlet. Hopefully my grieving will be a lot smoother than it was back then. Thank you again. See you in the sycamore trees, Carrie.
I can just see David Lynch with one of those letters in a frame in his office. You know, this is why we have to do it.
Carrie wrote back in 1991. She asked me to do it. Think of the bragging rights for that. Oh, right? Did you like the return? That's on me. I got you. Thank you for the feedback. A lot of good catches there.
Right? Excellent.
Yeah, I need to go rewatch that scene with Diane so I can listen for that tone.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I missed it completely.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you, Carrie. And up next, we have Dominic. And Dominic says, hey, Steve, Paul, and Em. I struggle to think of a more perfect hour of television. But to be fair, I have said that after each part of this tremendous gift we have all been given. I am a scorched engine oil puddle of pure concentrated emotion, and I have never been filled with so much simultaneous excitement and sadness for the conclusion of a TV series. I wonder if Mr. C knew his bouncing baby boy would be lit up with 1.21 gigawatts. Maury Povich has the results of the DNA test, and Mr. C, you are the father.
Ooh.
I feel like we have known this for some time, but it does not make the reveal about the nature of Richard's conception any less horrifying, especially with Diane's revelations about that ill-fated night in her apartment. Somehow, I don't think we have seen the last of Richard. I keep on replaying what the fireman said over and over again about Richard and Linda in my head. Might we see that rotten little shithead in another form? Perhaps he will be transfigured into a George Foreman grill. as an accompaniment to the Philip Jeffries teapot. Who the hell is Linda? Is she hanging out with Judy? Speaking of Jeffries, I had a thought as to the identity of the fake Jeffries who called Mr. C way back in the beginning of the series. I suspect the voice we heard belongs to that strange monkey-esque creature from Fire Walk With Me. Something about the timbre of its voice resonated with me. What that could possibly mean, I have not the slightest idea, but something about it just makes sense to me because I always felt that creature had some kind of greater purpose. I imagine that monkey from Indiana Jones on a walkie-talkie. that specific
the one that leads them the chase to Cairo,
the one that eats the poison dates,
bad dates.
I don't think that's the same kind of monkey, but anyway, Dominic says, I knew the next time we saw Coop, he'd be comatose in a hospital bed. When they started talking about how long comas could last, I audibly screamed out, "Don't you fucking dare!" at my TV. Not that I was one of the people begging for the rushing along of the Dougie storyline. I had a feeling they would give us a slow burn with Cooper's return, and I was cool with taking the ride. Boy, was it worth it. Special Agent Dale Cooper is back, and he has not missed a beat. I cried, I'll admit it. I was completely overcome. His lines, his actions, I was having a full-on man crush all over again. It was an absolutely perfect way to get him back. Many have noted the sparse use of the Badalamenti score this season, but Coop's return quite literally brought back the music to the world of Twin Peaks. The missing ingredient has been added, and now we ride full force into the final two-hour movie event, a piece of work I truly feel will bookend the amazing feature pilot from the original series, with Fire Walk With Me in the middle. Audrey's dance, wow. Even more surreal than the moment in the double R during the original run. That final reveal shows that she is definitely institutionalized in some way. Considering what happened to her and having Richard as the cherry on top of the rotten sundae, it is no wonder the poor girl ended up this way. The question I have is, are all the roadhouse scenes part of this delusion? Somehow I doubt that because of the reverberations that those scenes have and how they affect things outside the roadhouse. How the hell does she know Billy? I mean, Billy is real, right? Was he perhaps an orderly or someone that worked in whatever facility she is being held in, and perhaps she manufactured some sort of crush that seeped into her delusions? Is she having visions about what really is happening to Billy, with the blood pouring from his mouth and such? I've said it before, but it may have taken such an incredibly long time to be reintroduced to Audrey Horne, but the questions raised by her story arc are some of the most compelling this series has to offer. I seriously hope the return of her special agent will bring this tortured soul peace. Two more hours to go. Here is my wish list for the finale. Appearances from Harry Truman, Chester Desmond, Leland Palmer, and Laura Palmer. Freddie Hulk smashes stupid Chad in the face. Cooper and the Mitchum brothers grab some cherry pie at the double R. Jerry Horn somehow becomes a big hero and is instrumental in driving Mr. C back in the lodge. The real Diane is alive. And finally, we find out that Wally Brando is the dreamer. And this whole thing has just been his musings whilst on the open road. Bottom line, guys, I truly don't care what they give us, because all my expectations are constantly exceeded. And he signs off with Dom. That's the first time I've heard somebody put forth the idea of Wally being the dreamer.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Thumbs down on that one, Dom. I'm sorry. All the rest of that paragraph was great, and I'm on board with all that and so much more. But Wally needs to stay as far away from the finale as possible.
Yes.
Just go over there.
Thanks for that paragraph. I loved reading it, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I felt like I was reading one of those like awesome fan-made homages to a television series where it takes all the great scenes and with this real dramatic music. That's what it felt like reading that paragraph.
I especially like Freddie Hulk smashes stupid Chad in the face.
The garden fist.
Snap his Gregory Peck.
I think we're all just as confused about the whole Richard and Linda thing. This is not making sense to anybody. I haven't really heard anybody say anything that sounds plausible to me.
Except Carrie just addressed it by talking about maybe that's the stone.
Okay, I can see that part, but does that theory encompass Richard and Linda?
We have not met Linda yet, so maybe Linda's going to end up on that same rock at some point.
I also like the idea of Richard being transformed into a George Foreman grill as an accompaniment to the Philip Jeffries teapot.
Maybe Linda's his sister.
Try my Richard Horn grill. It's a real knockout.
You know, I mean, maybe it's his sister.
Oh, okay.
Mr. C had a second kid with her, like twins. Ugh, gross.
Well, all we know about Linda is that she's a vet and that she...
smokes.
A wounded warrior vet.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Ooh, long one.
Thank you, Dominic. Great
yes,
feedback.
Yes, thanks, Dom.
All right. Next up, we have...
Peter's Not Economically Viable McPherson. This is his name.
Next up, we have feedback by Peter's Not Economically Viable Pierce McPherson. Good evening. It seems fitting to use bullet points for this episode, so here we go. A good line. Stretch limo, girls in pink, no Douglas Jones. A
cocaine,
great
sausages, and champagne.
A great line. What the fuck kind of neighborhood is this? People are under a lot of stress, Bradley. A damn fine line. You are awake, finally. This whole reality is glitching theme is ingenious because it's impossible to tell editing or continuity errors apart from purposeful hints. The opening scene starts with a view of the desolate road, and the shots end after the road bends left. We then cut to the truck cabin showing Richard and Old Shark Eyes before again cutting to the road and then driving along the exact same left bend we just previously saw. So am I a keen-eyed investigator or a nitpicky nincompoop? That's a lot of alliteration right there. I'll say that. I'm going to go with keen-eyed investigator. Yeah, that sounds sounds more natural.
Yeah,
to me.
I would think that's what you are, but
which I don't know. I'm just as confused too. So I'm definitely going to go with keen-eyed investigator.
Yeah. I know there's been other things that people have addressed before, like when Bing went into the double R asking anybody if anybody's seen Billy. The patrons of the double R are all seated and standing in certain places, and then right after that happens, they shift suddenly.
Huh.
So is it a continuity error or is it on purpose? I would say it's on purpose.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going with purpose, but I also question some of the importance of some of it because David Lynch knows that we are going to follow every single little quirky detail right down the rabbit hole. And he's probably getting a kick out of the fact that only so many of them. I'm not going to say none of that. I'm not going to come out and say that there are any of them that don't have some sort of meaning behind them, but I'm just saying that there's only so many that are probably real pertinent to the story.
And this is why we need to do a rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
Next one, is Laura trapped inside Candy?
Well, Candy was definitely enamored with the idea that the Mitchum brothers have a heart of gold. So I don't know where I'm going with that, but Laura was a gold orb that came down and
yes.
I'm going with no on that one.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Why?
I've seen nothing that would support it. That's all.
Other than the three girls are kind of weird. I'm just saying.
Yeah, they're all weird, but it's a odd thing. But I don't think Laura's in there. I just don't.
She's going to come down like Glinda the Good Witch in that orb and then take everybody out.
She's got to have a more...
She's going to run in that orb like a hamster. Yes.
She's got to have a little bit more of a theatrical thing than just appearing inside of her. I don't know. I'm not saying it's a horrible idea. I just don't agree with it.
It's the possible because it would give her a body, but why
and,
not make
and
her
she
a copy
would be in
of
Twin
her,
Peaks.
Though? No DNA?
Yeah, something's up with Candy.
Yeah.
So
oh, for sure.
We'll see.
The next one, does the Uzi-toting Polish accountant live in the same house as the 119 female addict and her son? No, this is a completely different neighborhood.
Yes.
But that would be very surreal having him come in. I move drugs. It's time to eat dinner. Next one. Will we learn the fates of Chet Desmond, Annie Blackburn, Harry Truman, or Audrey's coat?
Her red coat. I hope we learn about Chet Desmond.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as interested in Annie anymore for some reason. And I'm expecting to see Harry Truman, damn it, despite what Michael Ancian has said.
The only one I'm actually holding out any hope for is Harry Truman.
Mm-hmm.
All of the others I'm interested in to varying degrees, Audrey's coat being the most important one, obviously. But I really only think Harry Truman is going to be the thing that we have a chance of getting out of all of those.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Gordon and us can hear Coop's heart monitor amongst all the other beeping machines in his hotel room. Yeah, that's because like right before the scene cuts, you can hear the heart monitor, like a beeping sound that sounds kind of like a heart monitor. And Gordon is trying to listen to something, hear beyond kind of thing. That's, we didn't really talk about it too much on the podcast, did we?
No, no, I just talked about a continuous tone that developed toward the end of that scene.
Okay. Next one. Coop's doctor is played by the same actress who was the extremely enthusiastic Great Northern desk clerk in the season 2 episode where the famous food critic was rumored to be visiting town. Her first credited role was in the 1989 TV series A Man Called Hawk.
Awesome.
Right.
So that is her. Cool.
Sweet.
While not as evil as he once was, Philip Gerard seemed more interested in being against Bob and getting his share of Garmin Bozia in the original run and Fire Walk With Me than being on the side of the Angels. But now it seems like he's continued to grow morally these last 25 years into one of the good guys. I love that a show 25 years later can create characters like Bushnell and the Mitchums who are every bit as endearing as those from the original series run. Yeah, agreed. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Like, as a group, collectively, we are really looking forward to the Mitchum brothers being in Twin Peaks. That's going to be, honestly, as a guilty pleasure thing, that's going to be one of the best things about the finale to me.
Yeah, it's too bad they couldn't bring Bushnell along as well.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Peter goes on to say, NATO spelled backwards is Odian, or Odian, which sounds surprisingly Irish. NATO in Spanish means hate, but not sure if it means anything else. NATO makes monkey noises and a monkey face, whispers Diane, and Fire Walk With Me.
Hmm?
Hmm.
I thought it was Judy.
Yeah. We still haven't learned the significance of Linda. Linda is also one letter off from being a Diane amalgam. Mandy, Candy, and Sandy are Diane amalgams, but with one extra letter. Basically, what I'm saying is we're all one letter away from being Diane. Peter goes on to say, fuck you is not an amalgam of Diane. In fact, they don't share any letters at all. I assume the non-lethal set of coordinates were sent by Diane off-camera, but were missing the last two digits, which is why after the other two sets proved to be death traps, Deadbeat Dad Coop sends the trigger for Diane to remember all at the risk of her identity being uncovered.
Ah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. The coordinates Diane sends are 17 digits long, but in the photo, they're only 16 digits. She added a zero in the middle. Also, the text she receives originally shows a received time of 4:31, with the time on her phone being 4:32. Then it's 4:44, with a time of 4:45 when she sends the coordinates. And finally, just before getting shot by Albert, it shows a received time of 3:50, and the time on her phone is 3:52. Does any of this mean anything? Because my head hurts, and I long for the simple days when the only numbers I tried to figure out were the ones that spelled boobs on my calculator. We know the Roadhouse is real because Shelley, James, and Freddie have been there. We also know it's able to be manipulated, possibly subconsciously, by Audrey, as the Pinecone MC has her dance and everyone stops to watch her until anger interrupts it with a fist fight. And I think we know it's tied to the lodge from the backwards music during the credits. Did Audrey snap back from the Roadhouse to the electric white room, or is she in both places at once? I hope your week has been as free of stress and full of Cheetos. Peter. Peter has a couple of PSs. First one, PS. I was told the sound in the hospital that Bushnell leaves Dougie's room to investigate is the same one in Ben Horn's office, and they certainly sound the same when I compared them.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we're all on the same page with that. PSS. Dougie Jones always lives across the street from the most interesting people. I got them mixed up and was thinking the Uzi accountant and the 119 meth mother lived in the same houses. It would have been like classic sitcom Leave It to Beaver, but with a steady flow of G. Willikers' violent outbursts. PSS, where are all the owls? Have a nice night.
We've only seen one, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. That was excellent feedback, Peter. Not economically viable, Pearson.
Yes, excellent feedback. Very funny. Actually, we've seen one actual owl, but I know we've seen owl things like cookie jars and Janie E's house. Mm-hmm. But it was, I think, all around Cooper that we saw owls. I don't think we've seen any in Twin Peaks that I could recall. I could be wrong. Hmm. Or all around Dougie, I should say. Joni has a PS, and she wrote in saying, "Hi, No Shippers. I forgot to mention this. This was very prominent in the parting shot of Janie E and Sunny Jim in the casino. It looks similar to the frog bug creature from part 8. It is only on the screen for a few seconds, then disappears. Hmm, is it about the frog bug? No, it's not about the frog bug. Or is it?" Yeah, and that looks like a scarab, in which I did notice that. And it does seem like that they purposely blocked the scene so that we would notice that. I mean, is it about the frog bug? Why show us a frog bug and not show us a frog bug again for another 8 episodes mm-hmm. or more? There will be a frog bug at the finale.
There has to be. I totally agree. I mean, why even bring it up? You know, but then, I don't know, it has to be. Something mm-hmm. like somebody's going to die or get hurt and it's going to crawl out of their mouth while they're on the ground or something. You know what I mean?
I agree. There has to be frog bugs. There has to be at least a tiny little bit just to, you can't leave it hanging like that.
Exactly.
You can literally, but
and they
you can't
could
leave it hanging like yeah. that.
All right, thank you, Joni, for that. And up next we have Kevin, and Kevin says, "Hi, No Shippers. I've been a longtime listener and decided to become a first-time writer because I love the community you've supported with your insightful podcast. I listen to several Twin Peaks podcasts throughout my week awaiting new episodes, but I always look forward to your comprehensive analysis and attention to listener feedback. Surreal art derives much of its meaning from the community that discusses it, so the presentation of theories from your listeners actually helps to create the experience of Twin Peaks for me. Thanks for all you do. Now for a Garmin Bosia laden theory. This is long-winded and it might hurt. I've been thinking a lot about the Log Lady's words and tulpas. Watch out for that one. Laura is the one. There's been some discussion that the smile inside of Sarah Palmer was Laura's smile. If Laura is a symbol of all that's good and pure, why does she now exist in the space we call the waiting room or Black Lodge? Cooper was decidedly upset by whatever she whispers to him, and I think this whisper will be the great reveal, which will change our understanding of her current role. Back up to tulpas. Laura was pretty upset after whispering to Cooper back in episode 2. Screaming, she flies up and out of screen in a similar manner to Diane when she's shot by Albert and Tammy and leaves our world. Both of these characters seem to be escaping the Lodge's control to tell a great truth to our pals in the FBI. And when they're caught doing it, they're again summoned back to the Lodge. Diane is forced to pull the gun and is killed. Laura is pulled through the ceiling. This seems to be congruent with the idea that Lodge entities are under the control of a central, ultimate force within the universe, whether they be tulpas, doppelgangers, or spirits. Sarah and Audrey might follow this trend as they seem to struggle with their identities. This in mind, here is my proposition. Laura has been corrupted by evil and has become the mother. Bob wants to be Laura or he will kill her. This has become a double entendre as Mr. C wants to be the mother, an evolution from his current form. Ah, okay. So finally, we have a motive for Mr. C here. But anyway, mm-hmm. moving on. Laura foreshadows that the character we knew her as is no longer accurate as she upsets Coop with a whisper, screams, and is cast upward in season 3, episode 2. Diane follows suit, and we might expect the same from Sarah or Audrey in the finale, depending on their circumstances. Laura's arms bending back might be seen as the mother spews Bob and other evil in episode 8. Laura is the one to watch out for may have been what the Log Lady was talking about, not Mr. C. The pale horse Sarah rides in on represents death, primarily in the throat-biting, glass-box lover-killing fashion we've seen. Twin Peaks is fucked, but it's fucked because of the evil men do. This theory is just a tiny piece of a much larger puzzle involving green gloves, golden shovels, and purple zones, but regardless, I'm just excited to enjoy part 17 and 18 on Sunday and be wrong about everything, so long as I find out if Hank ever got his disagreement with Harvey sorted out over keeping all of its for himself and Chip. Can't wait to hear your thoughts on the finale. I like how you're talking about this is a tiny piece of a much larger puzzle involving green gloves, golden shovels, and purple zones. It's like a weird farmer's almanac.
Right.
Type
Absolutely.
Of a...
Thank you, Kevin.
Yes. Thanks, Kev.
Yes. Great job. Thank you. We really haven't talked much about what Mr. C wants, and I like the idea of him wanting to evolve because we have had evolution precedented on here with the arm, for instance, and Jeffries himself.
Yeah. Hmm.
All right. Up next is JT. JT says, "What an episode. Is there anyone, and I say this as a Dougie Coop fan, who didn't yelp with joy at Cooper's impression of a more fluffy Judge Dredd? I am the FBI, or the less happy side. No wonder poor Sonny Jim was so upset. If I just found out my dad was Dale freaking Cooper and that he was leaving, I'd be utterly distraught. I hope the replacement Coop is sending a true doppelganger and not a useless lump like the original Dougie. So Richard is dead, and his dad's response is a tut, followed by goodbye, my son, probably more than Ricky Boy deserved. I did wonder if Mr. C could have sent anyone up there to trigger the trap, or was it the fact that Richard is, due to his parentage, a little lodge-touched necessary to test the doorway? The fact that we got the ringing again before Coop's appearance was exciting. Is the ringing at the Great Northern more Cooper reverb happening in places important to his story? Or is it perhaps someone else about to emerge? James's involvement makes me wonder if Laura is about to appear in the hotel's basement.
We wondered that.
Yeah, absolutely.
With a towel on? I'm just from Firewalk Me. Anyway, I was wondering if Paul's Island was... I'm wondering if Paul's Island has just collapsed Atlantis-like into the sea, or are the members of the Church of Diane staying faithful, clinging to the hope that it wasn't Diane when the real Diane is out there fighting for Coop. Poor Diane having awareness of what she was right at the end was heartbreaking. Great work from Laura Dern. Mm-hmm. Do you think we'll see this Diane again? I know she got Dougified and is a Pearl now, but it felt like she had more to do and say. If not, is Diane really NATO? Is she really in the sheriff's station? As for Audrey, curiouser and curiouser. The way the last scene was jumped from tense to gorgeously nostalgic to shocking was disorientating in the best way. I had no idea where it was going, and the incredibly hard cut to Audrey in a white room was like a slap in the face. Then the band starts playing backwards. If Audrey is in some kind of mental institution, and there was a lot to suggest that she is, she'll be lucky. I have the horrible idea that she may be somewhere much worse. Thanks for a great show. By the way, I looked up Paul's mug for the auction, and it's fantastic. What a talent.
Awesome. Thank you.
JT has a quick follow-up, and he says, to follow up on the discussion about Coop making a new Dougie, I'm not going to say whether I think Coop is making a new Tulpa for the family or to take a bullet. I'm not going to talk about Judy either. But I think that whatever it's for, the Tulpa would not be like the original Dougie. I assume classic Dougie was made from a bit of Mr. C and hence was a greedy gambling womanizer. This new one, however, will be made from one of Coop's hairs and would hopefully then be 100% Dale. In fact, Coop, this could be a business opportunity. Coop and Mike could sell copy Coops. Who wouldn't want their own Coop to eat pie, go camping, and urinate in the open air with?
I want one!
That's a great point, though, that if he was made from Mr. C, he would be the, you know, womanizing gambler, huh, mm-hmm. who is greedy and everything. And then, but if he's made from, I like that. Thank you, JT.
Absolutely.
And he's got one more.
Oh, and one more from JT says, on the Diane front and her levels of good guy, bad guy-ness, I may have a life raft for Paul and chums to climb aboard. I was thinking that her reaction to the text message was pretty strange. It almost looks like she was fighting against responding somewhat. And all through the ensuing scene with the gun and confession, Mr. C has done magic with phones and electricity all season. Is it possible that Tulpa Diane can be triggered by certain phone messages, a sort of Manchurian candidate? This would put us in a situation where she is conflicted, an angry person with regards to the FBI, but not actually bad, just being subtly manipulated by Mr. C's mobile mojo. It would certainly account for the mixed signal she's given us all season.
Yeah, that was definitely our take.
Mm-hmm.
On the podcast.
Yeah, the Manchurian candidate way. So, yes.
She was triggered.
Thank you, JT.
Yes, thanks,
JT. Thank you, JT. Very funny feedback, by the way. And up next, we have Daniel. And Daniel says, hey, no shippers. I hope this is direct and concise enough. Let's take a moment here to really appreciate the fact that a maniacal doppelganger of Cooper staring into a reflection of Bob in the mirror is no longer the iconic, infamous last shot of Dale Cooper's beloved character on screen, like it has been for the past 27 years, far longer than I've been old enough to be a fan. I only hope that the coming finale manages to be just as memorable. But it's funny, I've heard many less critical fans of The Return than myself argue with conviction that the old Dale Cooper we know and love just coming back after spending 25 years in the Lodge would be stupid, cheap nostalgia, and Lynch is far too much of an auteur for that kind of fan service, and how dare you want that? Well, 13 hours of Dougie aside, they were wrong, and the old Cooper immediately jumps up like nothing's happened while Julie Cruz is falling croons, and those same fans are over the moon. While being painfully electrocuted was a fitting end to that little shit Richard Horn, I'm wondering if that's really the end for him, because it seems like a lot of time was spent building up his character, now confirmed to be the son of a doppelganger, going all the way to the fireman ominously foreshadowing his name at the very beginning of the return for him to be dispensed so pointlessly. I'm probably the only one who feels bad for Hutch and Chantal. She never got that torture she was jonesing for. Get it?
Jonesing.
The Joneses. It sure was the last bag of cheesy snacks. Pouring one out for you, girl. Guess you just can't plan for an automatic totem accountant to shoot up your day in the United States. As Hutch so eloquently put it, fuck 'em in the ass. Tulpas or thought forms like Diane seem to be the same kind of creations as the original Dougie, and based on what we've seen, I'm certain they are something completely different from the doppelganger or shadow selves that the Red Room can divide you from. The twist of revealing Diane to be one of these may help retroactively clear up a lot of the murkier side stories from the earlier parts. The weirdness with Phyllis Hastings, who follows human nature perfectly, she was probably another tulpa made by Bad Dale as part of his operation on Hastings. The strange, impossible timeline of Major Briggs popping up on the radar, even the inexplicable yet fabulous candy. Tammy is probably a tulpa too, and that explains why she doesn't know how to walk, stand, or hold her face still like a normal human. See, that's what I was trying to say earlier.
Right.
Looks like Cooper is having Mike make another Dougie so the show can get him back to his real life without any guilt or uncomfortable angst about leaving a kid fatherless or a wife a widow. Really, this is just Cooper's way of making sure he doesn't get stuck with a court order to pay child support when he's gone.
Okay, I can go with that now.
All right, the thing with Audrey. It was such a bizarre, off-kilter feeling to hear the Roadhouse MC announce Audrey's dance and then play a recording of her original theme on the soundtrack as if it were live music within that world, calling her to the stage to perform an encore of her famously sexy diner dance as the crowd makes room and sways on time to watch. In fact, I enjoyed this bizarre meta space so much I actually wish that's where it would have stayed. Like if Lynch had just left it that. Yeah, that's the world of Twin Peaks, and it's really weird and surreal and not given us what came after to explain it away so easily. Now I see two extremes. One, the most simple and straightforward. Audrey has been in the place previously referred to in drugged up Roadhouse dialogue as the Nut House. If she just woke up from a coma, she wouldn't be standing up looking into a mirror. The most extreme and far-fetched. Audrey is the answer to Monica Bellucci's question. Were we in Audrey's dream this whole series? Are we about to get right back to the story of a newly awakened Cooper's showdown with his shadow personified at high noon in Twin Peaks? Or are Lynch and Frost about to pull the rug out from underneath us and let us fall through space faster and faster until we burst into fire? and the angel won't help us because, as the Nine Inch Nails sang, she's gone away. Aww. You're bumming me out, Daniel, but you're probably right. I definitely predict a rug being pulled out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had too much good in this last episode. There's got to be a counterbalance to that, unfortunately.
And we'll burst into flames.
But there's going to be no Donna to talk to about it, apparently.
Daniel says, it feels like there is still so much that needs to be addressed within the next 2 hours based on everything that's come before, but I guess we will see what the creators think is truly important. You can do a great movie in 2 hours. I would love for this to be the quality of a standalone film that is basically, okay, here's the concentration of the major storyline we thought of for how we resolve the entirety of Twin Peaks before we blew the script up from 9 to 18 episodes. Everything preceding it in the return was set up. Enjoy.
It was all pretend and just not pretend, but it was all a dry run. Here we go. This is the real deal.
It was all foreplay. Now time to get it on. Time to whatever. I'm not good with sex talk.
It's time to do it. It's time to totally do it.
It's time to put your flesh on my flesh.
Oh. I believe Def Leppard said it right with skin on skin. Let the love begin.
Sorry, the idea of Cooper trying to avoid paying child support by telling them that he's coming back, I love that.
I mean, that's smart.
The Nut House stuff is probably really on point. I don't know what the Nut House is, if they're talking about an actual hospital or some place where people go and take drugs. I don't know.
Yeah, some like kind it's some sort of in or...
you know, trap house, as they call them nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely get ready for some rug pulling. It's going to happen.
Sounds
dumb. And I really like the idea of Phyllis Hastings being a tulpa, because that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Why Mr. C would have said follows human nature perfectly. Now that it's like a piece clicking in, like in a puzzle.
Mm-hmm. See, yeah, and there's tulpas everywhere because these are like little pawn pieces that were placed out for their end game.
You're tripping over tulpas. They're everywhere.
So that would explain why they were asking Bill Hastings in the zone what his wife's name or who his wife is.
Oh, yeah. So they could make one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not to make one, but they knew that she was like some sort of agent.
Okay.
And maybe she somehow guided him into the zone. I don't know. As a way to get to Major Briggs. Thank you, Daniel.
All right. Next up is Nicholas. Nicholas says, "Hi, I'm Stephen Paul. The blue sky background to the Rancho Rosa intro logo telegraphed Cooper's return, but nothing could dull the rush from it actually happening, and happening the way it did. For a show that has such a complicated relationship with nostalgia, the return had dual meaning for me this week. I simultaneously felt the joy of Cooper's return and felt plopped back into my 20-year-old self's man crush on this guy who seemed like the goal to strive for as I headed into adulthood. Coop's first words, 100%, were reassuring and telling. His time in the lodge and his navigating near helplessness yet full awareness as Dougie seemed to have brought him into a wholeness of self that is ready to face and re-internalize his shadow with perfect courage. 100% also captures his relationship with the world, as he indicates when telling the Mitchums, who I doubt he would have felt comfortable with in the 1990s, that I read you 100%. Cooper's impressive leap back into himself and the world sent 90s me to my old copy of Neil Gaiman's Books of Magic, where John Constantine is described as riding the synchronicity freeway. And so everything just falls into place. Time, movement, even distance just sit up and beg for him. This previously seemed like Mr. C's copyrighted way of existing. But Dougie Coop's ride in the breakdown lane of that freeway paved the way for 100% Coop to accelerate from hospital to convertible to casino to limo to private jet to Twin Peaks in less than a day. All while two of his adversaries get gunned down, Coop gets aid from the lodge that previously trapped him, and gets an impossibly casual gun loan from his boss. Not to mention experiencing the adoration of his family and riding the streets of Vegas, flanked first by a never more radiant Janie E, and then by two improbable gangster bodyguards with hearts of gold. In fact, Cooper seems so much more 100%er than Mr. C right now, and has so much more help, that I wonder if Mr. C is going to be the boss fight slash big bad. He'll be formidable, of course, but with so much else in play in the expanded Twin Peaks mythology, I expect something on the scale of, if not specifically, Mother slash Experiment and or Bob among the adversaries to come. Aside from some garden fisticuffs, the conflict will be unlike anything we usually conceive of as a fight. Things could get dark before they brighten again. Non sequiturs, tulpas, doppelgangers, and straight up people are clearly different things. So that's three manifestations humans can take unless they become denizens like Philip Jeffries, plus or minus the Major. The only characters I know of who have had all three manifestations are Cooper and Laura. I'm considering the fireman's Laura Ball a tulpa. I wonder if that's significant, especially with us not knowing where and what form Laura got whisked away in week one. Two, maybe Jerry runs like he has a load in his pants because that's where he's been carrying those gigantic binoculars all the time. Three, the only thing I'll miss about Dick Horn is him being asked asinine questions by other sociopaths. Have you ever studied your hand? Do you understand the place? Number four, the only thing more surprising than the first in-episode notes of the Twin Peaks theme swelling in Mitchum's place was how right it felt. That crew is the Twin Peakiest bunch on the show. Number five, Paul is going to get Diane right on a technicality. Does he get full or half credit? On the subject of Diane, maybe her tulpa is confused enough that by sheriff station, she means Harry Truman's place.
Ooh,
I like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm anticipating a Harry mention or sighting. He does like him some damsel in distress, no matter how sick he is. I'll bet he can muster a, say it, M.
Get him out of here!
If Mr. C comes for Diane.
Yes.
Please tell us you guys will prolong the Sparkwood and 21 experience. Losing Twin Peaks and this podcast at once would be like suddenly being stuck watching TV with Sarah Palmer every night. Oh, yeah, oh. The same fight over and over and over. As usual, awesome feedback. Thank you, yes, Nicholas.
Thank you.
100%.
The two bookies that Janie E. confronted and how she was talking about how we're the 99% and now we're 100%.
Oh, nice.
It felt like Dougie was 1%, though, so because she was doing 99% of the work. That's why she was 99%.
She's not really aware of politics. She was just talking about her spot in that relationship.
Thank you, Nicholas.
Thank you, Nicholas.
Thanks, Nick.
Up next, we have Rachel. Hi, I'm Stephen Paul. This email is going to be too long, so I'm giving my suggestions on what to edit out in red. I'm just so super excited about Cooper returning that I need some serious gush time. Just let me say I enjoyed your podcast this week immensely. You all did a wonderful job, and I laughed out loud several times, so thank you. First, I knew Mr. C was Richard's father. I freaking knew it. Second, and most importantly, holy shit. Cooper's back. That was the best scene in the history of scenes, and I broke out into tears because I wanted it to happen so badly. And as if to alleviate our doubt, he confirms that he's 100%. Finally, when he showed up on screen in a coma, I was furious. I was sure this would drag on another episode or two, and I was really on the edge of just turning the damn thing off. I felt betrayed, angry, and when Gordon Cole showed up on screen in the hotel room with all the beeping machinery, I actually had bad thoughts about David Lynch. Shame on me. Shame I ever doubted. My boyfriend is out of town on work for the next couple of months, so I was texting him like mad, bemoaning Cooper's fate. He asked who Cooper was. I told him he was the guy who stuck the fork in the socket last week. He said he figured he'd wake up after that. I'm making him watch the original when we have time, as he's never seen it. The horror. He's going to watch it, and he's going to like it, damn it. Then the hum and mic appears, and then holy shit, Cooper wakes up. Truly the best scene ever. When the Twin Peaks theme played, I got chills. Everything was just too perfect, and it made the waiting all worth it. If I could kiss Mark Frost and David Lynch, I totally would. I'd also kiss Kyle MacLachlan if I could, but for entirely different reasons, though I'd prefer it if he were in full Cooper mode. Never mind. I just want to make out a good Cooper. Okay, enough gushing. Although I could go on and on about Cooper's return. M, like you, I had the feeling that Cooper is preparing for a self-sacrifice. I wonder when he said he would walk through the red door for good if he was referring to the lodge. I hope not. But I can't imagine Cooper doing anything but the absolute right thing, even if it means going back into the lodge with Mr. C to set the world right again. I don't see how he would allow a double of himself to exist in the same world, even as a tulpa. I love the theory that he's having a double with him to fight his double. No matter what happens, it's going to be awesome. Okay, Diane. In my mind, her tulpa's actions don't count as her own. Therefore, I'm still hanging out on the island making coconut phones and basking in the sun. Woo-hoo! Her scene was so heartbreaking. I can't even imagine the terror she must have felt. As a woman, those kinds of scenes just really mess me up inside. Burning questions. It's clear Cooper's double has his memories. Does he have Mr. C's memories as well? If it comes to it, how will he deal with the ramifications of everything Mr. C has done while he was trapped in the lodge? Why did Cooper take the ring when he told Laura not to and fire walk with me? And Chet Desmond disappeared when he reached for it. Is the roadhouse Audrey's dream? I'm hoping she and Cooper can pick back up from 25 years ago when their relationship didn't get to fully blossom, making them one of the slowest burn romances in the history of ships, even if she is damaged goods. Lastly, coffee all around on me. Feel free to send out my email to any feedbackers who'd be interested in some free Java. If you don't mind, I'll just send all three of you some in a single package. What address shall I mail it to? Do you have a preference for dark, medium, light brew or light brew? On to next week with 100% giddiness.
We're going to get some coffee. Coffee, mm-hmm. coffee, mm-hmm. coffee. Mm-hmm.
Dark. Thank you. For me. Dark.
Yeah, I think we all like dark roast.
Yeah.
Yes. And I will email that address to you. We have a No Ship Network.
P.O. Box.
Yes, thank you, by the way. And thanks for staying with me on the island. I think we might have lost some people, but it's okay. Hammocks call them on and TV.
Call them on the coconut phone. See if they're still there. They could still. So as to your question, you say it's clear Cooper's double has his memories. Does he have Mr. C's memories as well? I don't think he does. Because I think he has his own memories and he has some of Dougie's mm-hmm. memories because of the body sharing or whatever. But at the point where Dougie, like their memories deviate 25 years ago,
yeah,
whenever he came out into the world. That's my theory on that. And as to why did Cooper take the ring when he told Laura not to take it, because I think this goes back to what Ray was saying. He said to Jeffrey, said to put this ring on you, or I think it was Jeffrey's that told him that, right?
Yeah, I think
anyway,
so.
Ray was told to put the ring on Mr. C after he killed him, so he would be taken back into the lodge. This task is going to need to be done on Mr. C still. Mm-hmm. So now it's up to Coop to do it rather than up to Ray, whoever would have given that job to Ray. I don't understand.
So you think the ring will block the woodsmen from doing whatever they did, right?
Oh, yeah. That's possible, too.
Because they might not want to touch it to get sucked back, maybe get sucked in. I don't know.
It could repel them in some way as well. But Laura had no business with the ring.
No, she didn't need
it. So that's why, you know, Cooper was telling her not to take it. Or maybe he was just jelly because he wanted to give her a ring.
Oh.
It's still confusing. I'm hoping that we'll have a little bit more clarity with that device after the finale.
And we've talked a good bit tonight already about the Roadhouse and Audrey's dream, so we won't rehash it here. But, you know, this is one of the slowest burn romances in the history of ships. This is no ship network, so forget it. Forget it. They're not getting together. That's what I think anyway. Thank you, Rachel.
Yes, thank you, Rachel. And I'm with you. I'd be kissing all over David Lynch right now, too, or hugging or sitting on his lap or something.
All right. Up next, we have Wei and Paul, and they say, greetings, Team Sparkwood. We have all been waiting what feels like over 25 years for this episode. Wei and I screamed in unison when Special Agent Dale Cooper awoke, and nothing but a barrage of fist pumps filled our living room at the words, I am the FBI, being uttered by our special agent. While we are excited for the finale, we are dreading the end of the season. In the meantime, our feedback for episode 16. There are few things more heartwarming than a shared moment between father and son. This was not one of those moments. While we cheered as Richard Horn went up like a cheap sparkler, we wondered if he is banished to the lodge or just plain dead. Honestly, we worried more for Jerry Horn and his bad binoculars. As Doppelkoop failed to send his text, we cannot help but notice that this is the first failure with technology in the series. His first failure with technology in the series. Ah. Does this infer that his power is fading?
Yes.
Speaking of dads, did anyone else catch the callback to Donna when Sonny Jim cries, "You're my dad," to Cooper? Cue the waterworks. I did, actually. I said that to Em when it was playing. It reminded me of Donna.
You did. Mm-hmm. I remember.
They go on to say, don't worry, Tulpa / Sparkwood Paul. Wei and I are of the mindset that Diane was still working on the side of good. We suspect that she had somehow become reprogrammed, but has been trying to fight against Doppelkoop throughout the season. This begs the question, who created Tulpa Diane? With Diane stating she is in the sheriff's station, we have to believe that Nato had a hand in creating her. We would go so far as to say it's a strong possibility that the real / good Diane is still alive and trapped in the convenience store, or even somehow trapped with Nato. Because of this, and because of the visual similarities between Jeffrey's and Nato's location within alternate dimensions, we theorize that Nato and the evolved Philip Jeffrey's were working together. Perhaps it was Jeffries that Diane was working with to trap Mr. C, which means Ray was the one who gave him the second and correct set of coordinates.
Nice. Huh.
And finally, Audrey Horn. We'd be lying if we said the Audrey we've seen so far wasn't a bit disappointing. But with the twist at the end of part 16, we actually have some hope that, quote, our Audrey will be back in the final 2 hours. As far as where she is now, whether she is trapped in a mental institute or a nut house, per Tina's daughter, or the White Lodge, or any other spaces in between, we can't wait for Special Agent Dale Cooper to rescue her. Hopefully, Cooper can make up for that time he forgot about her and almost let her die from a heroin overdose at One-Eyed Jack's. But whatever. Bygones. Audrey is definitely one of the many dreamers in the show, and we wonder if it was the demise of her son or the return of the good Dale Cooper, or both, that woke her up in the end. We also can't help but notice that the two women who have been violated by Doppelkoop have both stated that they do not feel like themselves. It's as if the exposure to Cooper's doppelganger has removed them from their original selves and trapped them in another form or place. Mm-hmm. This connection also has us wondering if Audrey and Diane are both in the same place and are being sheltered by Nato somehow. Oh. So many questions still unanswered. We are drawn to these unending mysteries like that 119 girl to crack. Damn you, Frost and Lynch. Damn you and your beautiful, genius minds. We hate to be greedy before the final 2 hours are shown, but maybe you can throw in just one more season to tide us over for another 25 years. Your obliged and obedient servants, Wei and Paul.
So yeah, like this is back to the idea that there's more than one dreamer. And so Audrey is the first to wake up.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Within Twin Peaks. I like that idea too.
So we're going to see more awakenings then, if that's correct. Like at the beginning of next episode, they can't make it wait. Can't happen in the last 5 minutes. Hey, I'm awake now. Where is everybody?
It's pretty cool that NATO could be protecting them too.
Yeah, that she's a safe harbor for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that would make sense to me because why is Ronette Pulaski in the purple room as well? Because she was a victim of Bob.
Yeah, interesting.
American Girl.
Like indirectly, but she was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, she's cast as American Girl, but...
Thank you, guys. Truly awesome feedback, as usual. Unfortunately, there's not much more feedback that's going to be had. We're only going to get one more session. But, you know, if you guys...
Until we do our rewatch.
Yeah, until we do our rewatch. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And up next, we have Shayna. Shayna says, Dear No Shippers, are you familiar with the comedy troupe, The Fire Sign Theater? Their second album is titled, How Can You Be in Two Places at Once When You're Not Anywhere at All? And it's a phrase that's been popping into my head during the past two episodes. Identity and location are turning out to be elastic and slippery concepts in Twin Peaks. Mr. C is Cooper. Cooper is the FBI. And Dougie, that is, he will come home to Sonny Jim and Janie E. Jones. Meanwhile, Diane is not herself, and she's not actually in that hotel room with the Blue Rose Squad. She's in the sheriff's station. Sidebar, there's a theory that NATO is a transformed Diane. If it turns out that the show used an Asian woman as a placeholder for a white woman, I'm going to be really peeved. Then there's Audrey, whose situation appears to be well beyond existentialism 101. Is she awake in a psychiatric ward or in a coma or on another plane of reality? Is she anywhere at all? On top of this, there are so many unanswered questions. What happened to Becky? Will Shelley wise up and drop Red? What's the deal with Sarah Palmer? What did Hawk see in the woods back in part two? Where's the thing that killed Sam and Tracy? We met Richard, but what about Linda? What's the significance of 430? Who is Judy? Where is Laura Palmer? Is it future or is it past? Luckily, I have Monday off from work, so I'll have a day to marvel at Frost and Lynch's resolution or do some cathartic screaming before I have to face my coworkers. Either way, the world spins. Yours truly, Shayna, a.k.a. Laughing Academy. P.S. I just saw Jean Cocteau's Orphe, a retelling of the myth of Orpheus and Eurydice for the first time. It's on a list of 10 films which influenced Twin Peaks that the British Film Institute posted online. I don't know if they have a source for that claim, but there are strong parallels. In addition to the expected themes of love, death, and transcendence, Cocteau's film features beings from another plane of existence interfering in human lives, mirrors, time travels, gloves that grant supernatural abilities, and a dark and light zigzag parquet floor. Even if these resonances are just coincidental, the movie is worth watching. Thank you for telling us about that movie.
Yeah, nice.
I will check it out.
So once again, we have the echo of the sentiment here with Shayna that not all will be resolved. Her batch of questions, some of them I really didn't even think about. What happened to Becky? Will Shelley wise up and drop Red? Things like that. You know, you're just like, oh man, I kind of forgot about Red.
Yeah.
You just, you know, I mean, how many parts has it been since we've seen him? It was the one where Bobby saw the zombie girl.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
That feels like last year at this point. You know,
right?
And we haven't seen hide nor hair of him.
Yeah.
So there's going to be more plot points that don't get addressed.
We'll see Red
get addressed,
again,
it feels.
Because he's kind of a lieutenant for Mr. C, you know what I mean? So he's going to be a bullet taker for him.
That's all speculation. We've never seen them interact.
I'm hoping that he's not a henchman of his, because if he isn't, that could mean there could be like a cool little face-off, you know, where Red tries to be a badass because he thinks he's got this magic mojo, and then Mr. C beats him at arm wrestling.
Or punches him once and kills him.
Yeah. He doesn't need a green glove for that.
It's that dirty magic that he had that makes me think he had some kind of ties to him.
Yeah.
But who knows?
It definitely crossed my mind, but four days, and I would say all will be revealed, but some will be revealed.
Yeah, hopefully something will be revealed.
Thank you, Shayna.
Thank you, Shayna.
All right.
Yes, thanks.
All right, last feedback of the night. Johan, Johan says, thank you, M. Stephen Paul, for making such an excellent podcast about Twin Peaks. Firstly, allow me to sing your praise. Listening to you alongside this wonderful return to Twin Peaks has been a constant source of enjoyment. Thank you very much. I'm inspired by the genuinely inquisitive nature of your discussions and recaps, the delightful balance of insight, analysis, and spontaneous conversations. You really have a wonderful dynamic going on between the three of you. Each has a distinctive approach and skill set, like a team of superheroes, the Avengers of Twin Peaks podcasting. I should write that in my upcoming 5-star review, right? Yeah, I like
sure.
it.
Yes, yes, or probably more
like the X-Men. I don't know. If so, Paul would definitely be Wolverine. Well, 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 very nice. Also, with such an awesome podcast, it should come as no surprise your genius would attract more of the same. The listener feedback is top-notch, and I've enjoyed the feedback episodes immensely as well. Thank you, everyone. Which brings me to some feedback. Watching the return, what keeps coming back to me is this impression of somewhat transgressive actions and their consequences. Whether it's the birth of the atomic bomb, an act of violence, or someone just spewing anger and hatred in whatever direction they're facing, human actions, the way we lead our lives, as individuals but also as a collective, passing into the bloodstream of our shared culture, becoming part and parcel of our community. The normalization of acts of violence, allowing said spewing of hatred to become a way we interact with others. It happens. In recent episodes, I believe we've seen some instances of starting or building on to a positive spiral, maybe even breaking a destructive cycle. Sometimes in the simplest of ways, like acknowledging and owning up to our mistakes, or just addressing a fellow human being with kindness and respect, being truly golden. Mm. I have this distinct feeling of the world of Twin Peaks warming up, waking up as a result of these moments. With this in mind, going into the final two episodes, I wonder, what will Dale Cooper have to do to counteract the downward spiral in Twin Peaks? What is he prepared to do? I get the impression he already has a plan. Will it ultimately require a selfless sacrifice on his part? For his sake, I hope not. Not to ship anything, but hey, Coop plus Janie E and Sonny Jim sure are a cute family. If this finds you in time for the listener feedback, I definitely dig being included, but mainly wanted to write in and thank you. All the best to each of you. Thank you. Kind regards, Johan.
Thank you, Johan.
A Swede in Cornwall, United Kingdom.
Nice.
That's kind of like being Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court. Not really the same, but it's somewhere along those lines. Thank you very much for the feedback, and thank you very much for the kind words. And
absolutely.
What would Wolverine say about Twin Peaks? You know how we used to have our dear Crixus on Spartacus?
Wolverine would just chomp on a cigar and be like, I'd rather have a beer.
Yeah, whatever, bub.
Yeah, whatever, bub. What is this crap? How come there's three of that guy? I don't get this at all.
Yeah, exactly. I'm impatient.
Yeah, you would know that he watched part 8 because you'd come home and your TV would have like the claw marks straight through it. What was that crap? Paul, you're Wolverine. You're just going to have to live with that.
I'll take it. It's cool.
It's horrible.
I mean, I'll totally take it. He's short. I'm short. It's cool.
You got to grow some chops now.
I've had them before.
What X-Men would you want to be?
Ooh, what X-Men would I want to be? If Wolverine's taken? Because that's the go-to answer. Because he's just, I mean.
He's a badass.
You're unbreakable. Colossus would be pretty cool.
Mm. What's his name? Nightcrawler?
Yeah, but his power, if somebody gets a hold of you, you're done. You don't bamf out soon enough.
True.
He's not resilient. Havoc. I could go with Havoc.
Havoc. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
That's a lot of destruction. Now,
Jean Grey.
Who? What's that?
Jean Grey.
Oh, for me? Well, I don't know if I should be Jean Grey.
She's Norma Rogue.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't know if I would want to be an X-Men at all.
Who would you want to be?
I guess maybe I haven't read. I have read X-Men, and I've only read. I'm not like a huge comic book reader, though. I have read comics, so based on what I've read, I guess Mina Murray from League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
No, it has to be an X-Men.
No, it doesn't have to be X-Men.
Yeah, it does.
Comic book character. I'm no.
Dark Phoenix. Well, that'd be awesome.
Okay, yeah, Dark Phoenix. Evil.
There you go.
I'll take Dark Phoenix.
I mean, come on, or Light Phoenix.
I know it's Jean Grey, but it's she would be the Mr. C Mr. C version of Jean Grey, right? Dark Phoenix?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Dark Phoenix. Yeah. I can see that.
All right. I'm Dark Phoenix then. But then I would not be that nice person.
You wouldn't be too much of a team player. Yeah.
I would not make the world golden.
No, that's not what
would,
she does.
Well, it would make them golden, but it would be burned at the same time. Be all in flames.
Kind of like how Drogo made Viserys golden. It'd be along those lines.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
All right. So that does it for our feedback podcast for episode or part 16 of The Return of Twin Peaks. All right. We've got 2 whole hours left, folks, and that's it. Done. Finite. All gone. Bye-bye. We're kind of sad, but we all want to see what happens. So join us at the same No Ship time on the same No Ship website, and we will discuss it.
Before we sign off, Paul and I want to remind everybody that there is a contest that is running for the Double R mug that Paul has made by hand.
Yes.
So if you want to be in the drawing to win it, you need to write a review on iTunes. And we are able to check reviews from other countries. Problem is, there's a ton of other countries. So if you want to be in the drawing, please send us a quick email at noshipnetwork@gmail.com letting us know what country you're from, and we'll go take a look at your review. Or you can just screenshot it and also send it to us. Once again, write us a review on iTunes if you want to be on the drawing. And the deadline for that would be Tuesday next week, 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, that'll work. And then we'll check it. I'll have most of them written down. So that way when we get to the last point, I'll write down the last few. I'm going to put them all in the actual owl vase that I made to start off the mugs. We're going to draw a name, and one lucky person that wrote a review will get it for free. I mean, you can't beat it.
Aces.
Aces.
All right, so this has been a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Em.
We mean it like it is.
Like it sounds.
I am the FBI.
You're Wolverine, dude.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
You're Wolverine in the FBI.
Oh, yeah, that wouldn't work. You can't kill anybody. Oh.